This sermon reminded me of the peace and the love of God. Isn't that lovely? Nice to hear. Nice to hear. So I said, well, do you want to amplify that? And he said, well, it reminded me of the peace of God because it passed all understanding. And I said, go on. He said, it reminded me of the love of God because it endured forever. Oh, laugh if you will. Now, it's great to see you. Jeff was very kind to be the transport man. P-E-A-C-E. I want to address that. Specifically, peacemakers. How do we actively make what can be a passive head under the pillow subject of peace? The activity of peacemaking. I say guinea pigs because, thanks James Henderson, Richard Fowler, and I have the privilege of going to Denmark this year for the festival, for the feast. Ricky is going for the first 4 days, and I will be going for the second half of the feast. The festival is held at Hirtshals, I think that's how it's pronounced, Hirtshals, H-I-R-T-S-H-A-L-L-S, to my eyes, if not my ears, in the very northern tip of Denmark. And the subject over there for the festival is peace, aspects of peace. And Carlos, who takes care of Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, that area, has chosen that subject. He's not bound by, that's not quite the right word to say, but we have a different subject over here, as you know. You're going to Paignton, you're going to Bridlington, maybe Mallorca, maybe abroad. But certainly in the sites I've mentioned in Britain and Harvest Festival in Galway, which has come and gone with Joe Dukarch over there with Tammy. The subject this time is Acts 4:12, isn't it? You know, there's no other name given among men whereby we must be saved. Always like the word must. So that's the theme for the festival this year. It's good to do some homework, perhaps, and read the verses and parallel verses and see what the commentaries say and pray about it. Because you will be hearing at Paignton and the other sites in the UK the subject of Acts 4:12 and aspects thereof. But Denmark is having the subject of peace. And so I want to address that this afternoon, and by all means come up afterwards before I leave. Well, you would, wouldn't you? Come up afterwards and you know, give me input. I'm only too pleased for input because I want to get this helpful subject across to the 40 or 50 who will be there when Richard and I go. And I do appreciate the prayers that Jeff Stillwell made. For God's intervention, there's no doubt, as I stand here, that if you're just here to listen to me, there are other things you could be doing. You might learn something from another mind, but I am persuaded that ministry and those who speak from here do have an opportunity to think the thoughts of God. And of course, this is not exclusivity, because you sat there, you sitting there also, had the opportunity of God inspiring your mind, because if I checked your sermons, your sermon notes afterwards, I bet everyone would be different. You've got different needs. Even though the subject would be the same, your notes won't be the same. It's like a smorgasbord. You go to Scandinavia, you have a smorgasbord for breakfast. You know, you've got smoked salmon, you've got your boiled eggs or whatever they are, and you've got bread and lovely bananas and things. Everybody takes their plate up and takes something different. Table's a table, but we all take off different things according to our physical needs when it comes to food, be it breakfast or some other meal. And the same with a sermon. And I am awed by the fact that the grace of God is upon us. Dr. Dukarch once was giving an opening prayer, which is a little unusual perhaps, normally behind the sermon slot. But he, I remember an opening prayer, said, please pray, Father, we do pray for the speaking as well as the hearing. And that's very appropriate, because we're all in this together, as we say. And we do rely upon God to inspire thoughts. I've often, I know others who speak, you know, you have your notes down. Sometimes you look at them and they confuse you because you're on a different train of thought. And other times you come out with something and you think, that's interesting, never thought of that before. And that's, you know, that's God going through our minds and helping, because we're here to serve, we're here to help. And even the same subjects, you know, through another mind, that person comes at the subject from different experiences, doesn't he? Different backgrounds. And we can always learn something. I do remember when Mr. Armstrong spoke on the subject of, now, brethren, we're going to go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. The two trees. And if you were hearing a tape from Pasadena when he was speaking on that subject those years ago, I was thinking the other day that he'd be 130 years old now, which is extraordinary when you think about it, 1982 to 1986. You could hear when he said Genesis 1:1, a little sigh would go through the congregation. Because he's always going back to Genesis 1. But if you listened and didn't sigh and think of something else for a few minutes till he went on to another material, then he'd always say things differently. He'd have learned something. He'd say it a little differently. He'd say, oh, that's a good point. I never thought of that before. So, you know, to hang in there, even though the subject had been aired, is always a good thing. So I'm going to speak for a little while on the subject of peace. We're going to look at the global scene. We're going to look at the private scene and personal scene. I'm going to ask you the three questions that would be personal and pertinent to you in your private life. That is, are you at peace with yourself, in your mind? Are you at peace in your mind? There was a little boy who was listening to a sermon on peace by a minister, and he asked the question, "What is peace?" to the elder. And a little boy sitting in the front row shouted out, "Peace is when you feel all smooth inside." That's rather nice, isn't it? Peace is when you feel all smooth inside. So the first aspect, when we get to this about the personal aspect of being a peacemaker, are you at peace in yourself? The second one is, are the people you need to make peace with? Because as some raconteur said, you know, we're called to peace, not pieces. We're called to peace. Is there some unfinished business in your life when it comes to the peace of God and the peace that you need to have? Be it with your spouse, be it with your family, be it in the job, be it with the neighbours next door. Maybe the next door neighbour is having a little boy who uses the drums and they drive you mad and it's getting on your wick. We had that with our Alexander when he was younger, and the neighbours finally came across a little bit heated because they should have said something earlier. We didn't realise it was resonating across the neighbourhood in our village, and we let things go a little longer. Are there people that you need perhaps to see and to make up with or to discuss and say, hey, you may be right, you know, we'll look at some of the ways that we can do that. And the third one is, you might be called in as a, I'm not sure the real word, umpire, referee, in-between person, to triangulate two people. You're the third, so you've got a triangle. Two people who really, it's like these two microphones, you put them together, you get this interference on two microphones. And I'll give you an example with no names, no factor, of course, of two people even last week that I was talking to who have a problem with another person, and it's an impasse because both have misread the other. Both have misread. We can always jump to conclusions. And so I've been called in to help out in a situation like that and see if I can represent both sides. Now, you've been in that situation. I'm nothing special in that way. But have you been called in to help in a certain situation where people are not at peace, probably are at pieces, in pieces with each other? Because that's the way of the world. That's the way of human nature at the present time in this present evil world. And we can always jump to a conclusion about the other person. And this little story I told this morning, I told towards the end of the sermon, when it's getting a bit serious, so I'll tell you now, when you can jump to a conclusion about something, whether when you're with two people who need to make up, or whether it's between you and somebody else, it was the case where Bill and Mary had been married many years. And Bill went to the doctor because he was worried about his wife's hearing. And Bill said to the doctor, he said, you know, I think she's getting deaf, I can't work it out. I just want to know what I should do. And he said, well, the doctor said, look, Bill, I think we need to find out at what point she can't hear you. So what you want to do is you go into the kitchen when she's cooking chicken or something for dinner. We're having chicken tonight. I'll try it tonight. And at those paces outside the door, I'll say, what's for dinner tonight, Mary? And then if you don't hear anything, you know, if there's no response, you go another 5 or 10 paces and you say the same thing. You keep going until you're right up beside her. Then we'll know what sort of hearing aid she might need. Right? So Bill goes home very happy with this thought about his wife's hearing, and at 20 paces, the kitchen, lovely smell of kitchen, of chicken being cooked, he says, what's for dinner, darling? Didn't hear a thing, nothing, no response. So he went 20 paces or 10 paces near and said,
"What's for dinner, darling?" Still nothing at all. He thought, "Oh boy, she really has a problem. I'm so sorry. Poor Mary." So he went another few paces and said the same thing. He got right up behind her and said, "Mary, what's for dinner?" And she turned around and said, "For the fifth time, it's chicken." Doesn't need explaining, does it? You see, we can jump to conclusions. Okay, let's get to grips with what I got written down here. And again, you know, we look to God for guidance. This will not come out as it did this morning or in Denmark. But I've written this down to begin with. Shimon Peres died on the 28th of September at the age of 93. And you know who Shimon Peres is and was, mostly an applauded man who was a senior father figure in Israel and probably one of the last ones from the 1948 time, one of the last father figures of that era, if not the last. And he said regarding peace, and you probably saw his funeral on television, and Mahmoud Abbas was there from Palestine, and they had a handshake, not with Peres, but with Netanyahu. That was, you know, a lot of people didn't like the fact that the Palestinians were there to honor Peres' funeral. But Shimon Peres said this about peace. Well, anyway, he understood from hard-earned experience that true security comes through making peace with your neighbors. "We won them all," he said, "of Israel's wars. But we did not win the greatest victory that we aspired to, released from the need to win victories." That's quite profound, isn't it? We don't need to win victories. We want peace. In all of recorded history, some say there's only been 350 years without war on earth. Who's counting? But that's not peace, that's just no war. An absence of war, brethren, is not peace. And so we're going to look at how we can be peacemakers and look at the scriptures, and I'll leave my Bible here probably because Phil can snap them on the screen and we can all see them. That's the idea, isn't it? I'm sure Phil will do a great job. So that was an introduction on Shimon Peres, a fine man who attempted peace but died without seeing it completed in his lifetime, in his area. Now, if you know your WCG history, you'll know that Herbert Armstrong made many world trips to many leaders. Prince Charles, picture him outside number 10, picture of him with Margaret Thatcher, Golda Meir, around the world. He would not see Yasser Arafat on principle. He would not see Mao Zedong on principle. Had the opportunity, I believe, and had not the wish to see Pinochet of Argentina. There are certain people he regarded as despots that he wouldn't see. But he did meet, and I remember in college in the late 60s and early 70s, this remarkable time when the G7 and a beautiful gift of Steuben crystal and the opportunity of head of state's picture on a magazine of 7 languages and 9 million circulation or whatever it was, and Stan Rader working away, and Mr. Armstrong, of course, advertising man that he was, would promote that. Mr. Armstrong was known as a man, I don't know if he called himself this, but as an ambassador for world peace without portfolio. An ambassador for peace without portfolio. And he'd go around, and of course, you know the message at that time was announcing the return of Jesus Christ to this planet. And he met Shimon Peres. And some of you maybe have a video in the cupboard somewhere, gathering dust, of those days where Mr. Armstrong and Shimon Peres, whom he met on more than one occasion, were talking about peace. And I always remember, and I must go and look at the video when I find it, and get the inch on the tape where it is, might take a while, to find out the wise words that Shimon Peres said. It was great respect to Herbert Armstrong, no doubt about that. So, those were amazing days, and when Peres died, there's only one person left on earth now who met Mr. Armstrong in those extraordinary days of the late 60s and early 70s. You know who that is? Anybody know who is still alive today, who saw Mr. Armstrong as a visit from bringing an ambassador for world peace without portfolio? Who would that be? Hosni Mubarak of Egypt. Mr. Mubarak's still alive, but of course he's in prison and rather ill in his 80s. So. But that era is passing. Nevertheless, peace was certainly on Mr. Armstrong's mind. Shimon Peres certainly thought of peace a lot, if not all the time, from the beleaguered position of Israel in that hotbed. The world has a peace day every year, the 21st of September. But it's almost like, you know, the Bible, peace, peace, and there is no peace. Peace is, yes. 21st September every year, ironic. Mankind does want peace, yearns for peace. Even ISIS probably wants peace on their terms. But of course, without God, there is no real peace. There might be a caricature of peace, but not real peace at all. So, be a guinea pig for what follows. We are called to peace. It's not peace at any price. We're looking at the world first, and then we'll concentrate on our own situation, where I've asked you to think about your own mind with peace of mind, and then between other people and yourself, and then between other people who've asked you to come and be a triangulation, a referee, an umpire, an advocate, whatever you might want to say. You remember that we had Desmond Tutu in South Africa for the human rights, 85 this week, Desmond Tutu in retirement now. But he was there to bring reconciliation between a couple or more where one person had murdered his father, or this particular war guerrilla, for his own reasons, had murdered this person's daughter. And here was Desmond Tutu in the middle, the Ministry of Reconciliation. We have that in Glendora with Curtis May, you remember, and many others. The Ministry of Reconciliation, the importance as Christians of doing something with that. Obviously Desmond Tutu, being an archbishop, has the Christian principles and was able to be to some extent successful. I think it's also been tried in Northern Ireland between the Catholics and the Protestants. As you can imagine, it's necessary that something like that would take place. So, as Christians, we're called to peace by the Prince of Peace. 1 Corinthians 7:15, you might want to throw that up. Phil, as Christians, we're called to peace by the Prince of Peace, of course. And peace in the Bible, it's mentioned 20 times in Isaiah, nearly it's mentioned 30 times in Isaiah, 20 times in Luke, and in many other places. So it's very much a central form of the Bible. But nevertheless, we'll look at what Jesus Christ did, because sometimes the road to peace has to go through conflict before you get to peace. And we'll look at that. So do we have that one up? Where was I going? This is 1 Corinthians 7:15. There we are. But if the this is the you remember the context here is about husband and wife. Husband doesn't believe, wife doesn't believe. They leave, and Paul is addressing that in Corinth, where lots of those things happen. But if the unbeliever leaves, let it be so. The brother or the sister is not bound in such circumstances, the marriage state, because God has called us to live in peace. And sometimes it's better that that happens than there's conflict within the family forevermore until the death. We're called to peace, Paul says. But we look at our poor world, and we look at some of the words for peace, you know, synonyms. Because peace, you think peace, yes, what do we mean? Well, accord, other words, friendship, love, reconciliation, truce, unity, amity, armistice, cessation, conciliation. Actually, cessation isn't peace, it's just a stopping of doing something. It might be a step on the way. Concord, order, treaty, unanimity, and union, says my Google. And some of the bad words, disagreement, hatred, discord, agitation, disharmony, distress, fighting, frustration, upset, war, and worry. Certainly when the church changed some of the major doctrines, 21 years ago, 32 nearly, there was a lot of emotion at that time. I think a lot of it settled and bedded down. It's a long time now. But nevertheless, 9 years after Mr. Armstrong died, a lot of stuff hit the fan, as you know, if we can use the vernacular. And that caused a lot of problems between people. A lot of disagreements, a lot of broken friendships, even some walking the other side of the road, from brothers who perhaps would believe something that they didn't believe before, and this other person didn't believe at all. Two can't walk together except they be agreed. I don't agree with you, so I can't walk with you anymore. This puts tension in the relationship. It's Amos 3:3, but it's a misunderstanding of what's going on in Amos 3:3 if you want to check the commentaries. But Mr. Armstrong, our present president, when he was assisting his father those years ago when these things started to roll around, one of the ministers in the church who was a brother in the faith towards Jody Crouch and knew him well was so appalled at what had happened as the brother saw it that he wrote a letter to Dr. Crouch and said, you know, you've ripped away everything, you've thrown this out, you've done this, you've done that, I hope you burn in hell, signed, your brother in Christ. Now that's sad, isn't it? That's sad. There's a lot of emotion. You can understand. I can understand that emotion. I was emotional at that time. You probably were if you were there at that 22 years ago. It settled down a little bit, but is there still a problem with that? Or are we able to get off people's backs, cut slack, not make issues, honour people's conscience, and ask the overall question, in the meantime, how do you treat people? It is a learning curve. It is an active thing. Carlos and Ricky Fowler and I were on Skype. Marvellous thing, Skype. Totally free on the computer. You can see people around the world. Carlos, Ricky Fowler, Richard Fowler and myself. We were talking about the Denmark Festival. And the one particular sermon that I'm giving now, as I prepare it in my mind to put the final touches, Matthew 5:9 says you're blessed if you're a peacemaker because you're going to be called the sons and daughters of God. Matthew 5:9, it's in the beautiful attitudes, isn't it? The Beatitudes. And again, keep thinking about peace of mind, about whether you have to see someone who there's still some unfinished business between you. Maybe you avoid people because you're not on the same wavelength. We're all different. And some things can't be mended. You just have to say, we'll let it lie there. Sometimes there isn't able to be a reconciliation except the acknowledgement that Christ died for the brother that you have a problem with and vice versa. But the pamphlet, or the booklet actually, that Carlos is putting together for Denmark, and which he'll give it after the festival to back up what's being said, the aspect he wanted me to speak about was this one. There is a difference between wanting peace and making peace, this says. When, for example, people think they do right in refusing to handle a difficult situation or refuse to enter into a conflict that they ought not to ignore, they close their eyes to the problem because they believe that if it did otherwise, then they would no longer be exercising peace. But that's the easy way out. I've known people say, look, I've got this problem with this. I just can put my head under a pillow, figuratively speaking. Just let it go. It'll go away. I'm not going to be active about this. I'd rather not get involved in that. That's avoidance. It's understandable, but it's still avoidance. This is a misunderstood standing of what Jesus tells us. We should both love peace and make peace, the activity of making peace. Making peace comes from solving a conflict, not by ignoring it. If we do not make the effort to solve a conflict, then the problem will grow until it becomes unsolvable. The road to peace must sometimes go through conflict. And we'll look at some examples of Jesus Christ. The money changers in the temple, perhaps? The Jewish rabbis looked upon the word shalom as being the highest ideal, that a person being able to create right relationships between people. You know, we are created for right relationships. And this world doesn't do communication and relationships very well. We don't, as a human race. With God's grace, we're learning differently. But, you know, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, they might shake hands tomorrow night, but there's a difference. You could just see it all over the place. People don't relate and communicate because they're so different. And this world, Mr. Netanyahu, Mr. Obama, do not make music together when they meet because Mr. Obama has got certain views about Israel which Mr. Netanyahu doesn't accept. Oh, they get together in the White House, but there's a, you know, communication relationships is not good. How about you? How about me with communication and relationships? First of all, of course, communicating with God and having a relationship with God. And communication relationships are two different things. That's another subject. But the communication in your life between you and God and the relationship you have, that personal, loving, close embrace, which we had on some of the songs that we sang this afternoon, that is very, very close. But in this world, we don't do communication and relationships very well. But the Jewish rabbis looked upon shalom as being the highest ideal, that a person being able to create right relationships between people. To make peace is to create relationships of trust, openness, and concern. In modern English, the Greek word translated blessed are the peacemakers, means happy. I think in the Greek it's Makarios, and he was an archbishop of Cyprus years and years ago. But Makarios, I believe, means happy. When we modernize this important verse in the Sermon on the Mount, it becomes happy are those able to create right relationships because they will be called the sons of God. So looking at this poor old world, we see and weep with those, shall we say, in Aleppo. The problems in Haiti, of course, which we heard about. The problems with Aleppo being the sort of central core, even breaking down relationship between John Kerry and Sergei Lavrov, the American and the Russian foreign ministers, whatever they might be. Even they now have a problem getting together in the United Nations. They weren't talking, and they're supposed to represent their countries to solve what's going on. A tangled web we weave. But of course we know why it's weaving that way. You know, James 4:1, from whence comes wars and fightings amongst you? Do you want to throw up 4:1, if you wouldn't mind, please, Phil? It's up there already, yeah. Where does this all come from? Well, we are to be peacemakers, but 4:1 in James 4:1, they come from the lusts in our members. And of course, the God of this world is very happy for that, because that's where it all lies. Human nature is just the way we are as humans. Animals have animal nature. We have human nature. But ours has been tuned, to use Mr. Armstrong's excellent analogy, and they all fall down, these analogies. There's a fairly good one, like a radio, and he wasn't the only one to say it. But you have a radio, you can tune in to everything that's out there. You get a laptop on the internet. Look what's out. What do you mean out there? This is there, isn't it? Yes, but look what's in it. And our nature could be tuned. It was tuned to the God of this world, right? The spirit that now works in the children of disobedience from the Garden of Eden. The prince of the power of the air, the power of darkness. So mankind has that bias against God, just naturally a bias against God. Not neutral, you know, like Adam was at the beginning. Most people have, not everyone, but most people have that bias away just naturally because we're tuned in. As you might tune in to terrestrial TV, or to Sky, or to the third program, or to Radio 2 on a radio. But we have, by God's intervention and our love of God and wish to accept the forgiveness of God and the love of God as we're called by His grace, we have that other channel of, again, give and get. You know, how much simpler can you get by saying the give way of life, the get way of life, and where we've heard that before. But with the broadcasting from God through His grace, we're tuned in, are we not, to another band in the analogy. A broad band of the love of God, you might say. But doesn't mean to say that the original way that human nature is has been closed down and its aerial smashed. You have an open mind to the things of this world and Satan. But you block it off because you want, mostly, because you want to have the way of God. The other channel of love and peace and giving and helping. Because peace is not something we find. Peace, peace, and there's no peace. It's coming from God. And this world doesn't have that opportunity. I got written down about the world wars. World War I, the war to end all wars. Oh dear. 50 million, many in the ovens. World War II. Neville Chamberlain ruined his life. 1938. Peace in our time. Back from Germany. And Adolf Hitler waving the piece of paper. He ruined his life because 1939 came. Oh, but we wanted peace. And of course, we had to do something, didn't we? We couldn't just lie down and put our heads under a pillow. We had to respond to what was happening in Germany, France, Austria, Poland, and so on. We had to make a response. We didn't want it that way. So sometimes the road to peace does not come smooth, and you have to do things. Harry Truman, you imagine the pressure he had in 1945, was it 46, about the atom bomb. Nagasaki, Hiroshima. Drop it and finish it for good with a Japanese advance to finish the Second World War. Would you like to make a decision like that? The result was, to some extent, human peace. Now, not agreeing or disagreeing with what happened. That's not the subject. But sometimes, you know, to stop things happening in a certain advance, things have to happen. Because, you know, you get ISIS having little kids. Well, I won't go into the details of what the little kids will do by and all of that. ISIS, so-called, it's almost like it's not natural human behavior. Not natural. This is just almost demonic. And we must remember that those powers of darkness are out and about in this darkened world. in Denmark. I'll talk about the Battle of Jutland, which is just off the coast to the west of where we meet in the north of Jutland, Denmark. The Battle of Jutland, that naval battle 100 years ago, the Somme. Thousands of people in the first day mown down as cannon fodder. What an extraordinary thing. An extraordinary thing. We had to defend. So, you know, with all of that in mind, we could say a lot more, but we're not really emphasizing the world situation. We're merely noticing the terrible things that have gone on. And I'm also mindful, as it comes to me, that G.K. Chesterton, the great author and philosopher of the 19th century, G.K. Chesterton, British guy, that was very influential in C.S. Lewis. G.K. Chesterton read a paper one day and it said, "What is the cause of all the wars on earth and the problems? Where does it all come from?" And he wrote back in just two words, who is responsible for all this? He wrote back and said, "I am. As a member of the human race, that's it, I am." And that's what's happened. We all have our part and share, whether it's, you know, internecine and between families, or whether it's on a global scale, families blown up to a massive scale. We do live in an extraordinary age where this seems normal. This is, well, this is what happens. And we pray for peace, but there is no peace. There is certainly peace at certain times, but it doesn't last long, and off you go again in another direction. And for all the thousands of years, apparently only 250 or 350 are absence of fighting, which is not peace. It's a certain quietude, but it's not peace. So let's come back to these three areas: your own mind, you and somebody else, and being called in to help a log jam between two other people, or more. First of all, we can look at Jesus because he is the lens through which we see these things. And Mr. Armstrong, as an ambassador for world peace, fully supported Jesus Christ, of course, but the spotlight was not fully on Jesus Christ, more doing the work that Jesus Christ, that Mr. Armstrong and Loma Armstrong felt had been given them, of pronouncing the return of Christ, Matthew 24:14, this gospel being preached in all the world as a witness. So that was a commission Mr. Armstrong was attached to. And when the focus came on Jesus Christ, I was one of the first ones, and I've said this here before, to say, what's all this about Jesus? Because our focus was in a different direction. But Jesus is the key, the foundation stone, the yardstick, and he is, of course, the Prince of Peace. That's Isaiah 9:6. We'll look at some scriptures at the end of the sermon on Isaiah, passages about Jesus Christ, not accepted, of course, by our Jewish brothers and sisters as being Jesus Christ, but by God's grace, we do believe that that is very much talking about it. Isaiah 9:6 talks about Jesus Christ, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. You can probably see it behind me here. The Prince of Peace. My peace I leave with you. There's another one. It's John 14:27 for your notes. We needn't even turn there unless Phil is able to switch quickly. My peace I leave with you, not as the world gives. John 14:27. The world gives a certain peace. Yes, of course. It tries hard. It doesn't want really to be in that situation. It does want the dominance of its own particular theology and its own particular ideology. But it doesn't really want to be fighting and losing brothers and sisters and whole tribes of people for it. Jesus Christ, as the Prince of Peace, leading his peace with us, did say, "I didn't come to bring peace on the earth." You know, Matthew 10:34 for your notes, if you wish to take notes on that. "I didn't come to bring peace, but I came to bring a sword." He said, "What's this? Is that in, you know, how's that figure out?" Because Satan, as God of this world, was confronted by Jesus Christ. Not in the most nice way at all, of course, because there's a domination here. And it's important to realize that God of the Old Testament is the same one we know as Jesus Christ, the one you pray to. Yahweh, the revelatory thought, the Logos, the Creator, the Word. In the Old Testament, that was Jesus. You've only got to look at 1 Corinthians 10:4. The rock that followed them, that rock was Christ. So it's the same God in the Old Testament and New. Look at the wars and the fightings and the difficulties. And I know there are difficult scriptures about the wrath of God and so on. There's some good answers as well, by the way. But God is love. But sometimes the road is through conflict. And Jesus Christ showed that when he came to age 30 particularly. Then he was head on with the scribes and Pharisees and all that was going on. And of course the God of this world. And you think of the money changers. Now, I don't think he had a twinkle in his eye, but here's a 30-some-year-old man, looking like any other Jew of his time, in the temple. "You made my father's house a den of thieves!"
And he had a cord of rope and drove out the animals. Doesn't say the people. I'm not sure he actually whipped the back. I don't know. It doesn't say, so we shouldn't go there. But he was angry with that. The zeal of the house of the Lord has eaten me up. Isn't that a prophecy in the Old Testament? As it comes to me. So Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, at times didn't seem particularly able to make peace. But he did, of course. But it's through suffering, through trial, and through the activity of what he was facing. You know, he called the scribes and Pharisees, Matthew 23:27, whitened sepulchres full of dead men's bones. He loved them. He died for them. But he nailed it for what it was. He was invited to a scribe in the Pharisee's house for dinner. And he said some pretty hot things at dinner. If you were a guest and you said, I don't like your wallpaper, as for this china, the food's terrible. You wouldn't stay around long. You wouldn't even have the first course, let alone have the ice cream. Jesus Christ would say it like it was. Because they were opposing themselves, and he was the Prince of Peace. But with peacemaking, sometimes what I'm saying is, on a human level, we do go through times when we have to just be a bit tough. And there's a lovely scripture in Romans chapter 11, verse 22, talking about the Jews and Gentiles, and how the Jews were refusing the Gentiles coming in as converted people. And God says, look, note it, Paul says, remember the goodness and severity of God. It's a lovely scripture. I say a lovely one. It shows the balance. Oh, God is love, and he just loves it. But he does, that's true. But sometimes it's through a lot of tanglement. Notice the goodness and the severity of God. Goodness towards you, but severity to those who are saying, no, we mustn't graft in the Gentiles. So the road to peace is quite rocky at times, but the ultimate goal is the peace of God shed abroad in our hearts, which surpasses all understanding. Sometimes Jesus Christ avoided trouble, didn't meet it head on. And there are times you've got to think, now, should I go into battle here? Could it be counterproductive? In his early ministry, people were out to kill him. It wasn't the right time for his death, because it was all timed out, as you know. And he would just go through the crowds who were out to throw him over a cliff and get away. They've got to kill him, throw him over a cliff. But it's almost like the parting of the Red Sea. The people, he just walked through them, went out to a desert to pray. Because it wasn't time for him to meet his death. And so Jesus Christ's life can show us that there are times when we have to be fairly tough on things like this. Tough love. There is such a thing as tough love. You know, when your kid is in drugs or something worse, sometimes all the family gets together in the kid's bedroom and just says, you're stopping this, and we're all here to tell you that. Is it not called tough love? Something like that. You know, it's love, but you have toughness about it. We're not going to have you ruining your life with drugs. Stop it. Here's your aunt, your uncle. We're all here. No more. Kids scared to death. You know, it's tough love, but it's aiming for something. Now, I'm not saying you do that with all your difficulties you might be thinking of. You might be sitting there thinking, no, I have no difficulties with anybody. I don't really believe that. I think we do. And I'll give you a few examples, not private ones, but personal ones, without names or pack drill, that might be helpful. But there is a balance, as with God, the goodness and the severity of God. Yes, God is angry with the wicked every day, and so on. Why? Because they're opposing themselves. You know, you show love to your children, but sometimes you have to be a bit heavy, don't you? Didn't you? Will you? I think so. Okay. Are you at peace with yourself, and am I? And if we're not, we can't look anywhere else for it. It has to come from God. This is the Philippians 4:6-7. The peace of God that passes all understanding, surpasses all understanding. Keep your hearts and minds. It's up on the screen behind you, I'm sure. And as C.S. Lewis said, you know, God cannot give us happiness and peace apart from himself, because it's not there. There's no such thing. Cannot give us happiness and peace apart from himself, but it's not there. As a human counterfeit of peace, that's probably all this world can do in the barrage of battles that surround us. But peace in our minds comes from knowing who we are, knowing whose we are, knowing where we're going, and knowing the wonderful world tomorrow that lies beyond our death or at the return of Christ, whichever comes first. Now, we could say a lot more about that, but do you feel smooth inside? Do I feel smooth inside? Not really, not in all times. There are things that trouble me, and they're always there. But overall, with God's grace, we know that nothing can happen to us because our hands are in the hands of God, and we know who's got the greater grip. Thank God for that. But 2 and 3, as time moves on, peace with another person. I mentioned the doctrinal divisions in the church, in particularly, certainly in America and over here, and probably other parts of the world, in 1995, when we became aware of certain things that were sacred to us, certain things because we were very well taught, and it's hard to unlearn. And in the meantime, you know, we fired up quite a bit about the difficulties. And we had brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers, and it was an emotional time. And some of those hurts are not healed. We had our derivative groups, and I hate saying breakaways, I would rather say derivative groups, people who moved away from us, and I would confess to you that Christianity is portable. I see no reason why people who were converted in our fellowship, if they wish to take the conversion somewhere else because their conscience wouldn't allow them to be in a fellowship that teaches this, that and the other, then I think Christianity is portable. Can I put it that way? But either way, isn't it sad? And there are still some people who won't speak to each other. Taking some scriptures about walking to the other side, don't even have tea with the people. There's one particular group I could mention but won't, who's this fellowship, the whole Grace Communion International, including WCG, because I mean, we do have, you know, WCG, GCI. Disfellowship, the whole of us, because mantle fell upon this individual. He's right, we're wrong. Now, I would say to you that none of us are right. Where is truth? What is truth? You know, is it the X-Files? Truth is out there. Do you remember that? Truth is out there. I'm not right about things. I'm right, you're wrong, if it was something we were discussing. I look at where truth is, and from a spiritual point, don't we all look in the Bible, and say, well, that's what I want to attach my life to. That's what I want to decide to do. It's not that I'm right. I believe that is the better way that we should go. And if you see things differently, what am I going to do with that? You just see things differently. Often as a minister, you know, we do get people who challenge us on certain things, sometimes not in the nicest possible way. That's all right. But look, we're all wrong. Only God is right. I mean, we come in line with some of the things that God says, as we would see it, and we become right. But I'm not right, you're wrong. You know, I think truth is out there, and it's just my feeling, rather than I would decide, and I've got the right, and you don't agree with what's in here, and I've got the right one, and you haven't. That, you know, obviously causes division. I don't think any of us really would subscribe to that particular view. But we have to think about what can we do for people who would have a difficulty with us. Now, we're all different. We are called to be peacemakers as an active role. And we need to look at ourselves to know how can I handle a situation. On the second point about going to someone that I had a difficulty with, I had to go to an identity parade in Norwich, where we live, near Norwich, 10, 15 years ago, because my car was rammed by a drunk driver wearing a tam o' shanter and with a red beard. I glimpsed him, he didn't stop, roared off, and the car was written off. So Norwich police did an identity parade, and here are 10 people all wearing red tam o' shanters with red beards off the street. You know, I'm sure that the criminal, you want the criminal, he's a bad driver, was among them, but I couldn't finger anyone, of course, because they all look the same. But if you go to an identity parade with people, everybody's different, we're all different here, you know that, what a silly thing to say, of course we are, but I could look into people's eyes and you could in an identity parade. You've got them down the line, and you know, you'd look in people's eyes, the eye of the soul. The soul of the, what's it called? Soul of the heart, you know, the eye, the mirror of the soul. And most people, hey, you could give or take. Yeah, hello. Fine, you know, you're a human being. Where have you been half my life? Other times, you look at a person, you say, in your mind, hey, we can get on well. Never met them at all, but hey, I could, you know, we could make music. We could relate quite well together. Other people, you say, I don't think it's going to work. You know, if there was the occasion on the identity parade where you would be told to make friends with this person and go and have dinner, you'd know that it's not a good mix. Just the way life is. I was on the tube about a year ago wearing my purple shirt and white collar, and some young chap got up to give me his seat. And I thought, do I look that old? Probably do. And we had a chat, his name was Martin, and I never met him in my life, I'll never meet him till the resurrection. And we had a lovely conversation, no history, you see, no history at all, good or bad. And so we chatted about this, we chatted about that. He had about four stations to go, and by the time I said, indeed, my seat, somebody else had sat down there, so here's he and I talking in the tube. Now, you don't talk in the tube, do you? You get in the tube, as I will tonight, and you look everywhere except in the other person's eyes and say, hello. You don't do that on the tube. Although there is something in the papers last week which said, you can talk to me, and they're trying to put labels on people who wish for labels to say, you can have a conversation with me if you like, on the tube. I don't think it's going to work, quite frankly. What do you think? But this person, we had a lovely conversation. His name was Martin, lived in Milton Keynes, and I could have written 1,000 words on him, probably in four stations, waiting to get off. He got off before me, and cheerio, Martin, nice to meet you. Never see him again. Conversation, what, 7 or 8 minutes probably? And when the doors and tube took off, people were talking. They talked to me, and it started a conversation going. It's interesting. So some people, you'll just, by the way, the reason he was putting his seat up with my purple shirt was because he thought I was a bishop. Now that's better than saying he looked so old, isn't it? And he was perhaps, I'm not a bishop, of course, but I was wearing a purple shirt, and he probably mistook me for some clergy who was honoured with a seat. I don't know, maybe it was as I look ancient of days. But either way, there are some people you can just click with, other people don't. So, you know, you need to know your quarry, you need to know your target in the nicest possible way. First thing to do with all of this, of course, when you're thinking of something like this, is to pray about it. To pray for guidance, as we do for the sermon, for the hearing, that God will get through in some small or big way, in the way that words are said, in the way a sermon is crafted, in the way you take your notes. And so dynamic peace has to come from God. To ask God to help you get the facts about a situation between you and someone else, not to get it back to front or jump to conclusions. Because after all, we do have God's Spirit if we're converted, and the fruit of the Spirit includes love, joy, peace, long-suffering, goodness, temperance, mercy. Peace is in there. And so you have the equipment that we need always to factor in God. Because as C.S. Lewis said, it comes from God. It doesn't come from you. God will use your experience in this. But to get on your knees, however you pray, and to ask God for guidance in these things. Another point could be, what's your motive? Is it a motive of anger to get level with someone? Sometimes it can be. Get your pound of flesh, Charlotte's pound of flesh, you know. The difficulty with someone else, do we let it fester? The longer it goes, the worse it can become. What is our motive for going to someone? Matthew 18, of course, going to your brother. You remember that one. You know, if your brother offends you, or sister, you go and sort it out. And if they won't receive you, you bring somebody else along. If that doesn't work, you know, you take it to the minister. If that doesn't work, there's a... Normally you never get to that end of it where you have to regard them as less than a brother. But to go and see someone and to just tell them, peace of your mind, you know, that you got it wrong, fella, lady, and I want you to apologize here because I didn't like the way you treated me. You're not going to get anywhere like that. If you pray about it, H.L. Mencken, an American politician and author, said, one thing I've found helpful in relationships is say, you may be right. You may be right. Now that's a helpful phrase. You're not getting into anything, but to make, you know, agreement to say, look, I'm awfully sorry, I may have misunderstood this, but I saw this happen. Now Murgatroyd, Aloysius, take a name. I saw this happen. It worried me because I don't think that should happen in the church. Now correct me if I'm wrong. I may be wrong in this, but can we talk about this? Because I want to help you, but I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like the way you handled it. I may have misunderstood. You know, take the humble approach. And then, in the end, of course, you notice in Matthew 18, it talks, in the end, you've won your brother. If you say, he said, oh, you're right, I appreciate that. I did need that, actually. I needed somebody just coming alongside me. You know, it talks about winning your sister, winning your brother. And sometimes, you know, in life, it's a lot of surface ceremonial conversation with people you don't know so well. How's the weather? Nice to see you. Oh, it's been a long time. How long is it since we met? You never really get down to it. When you go to somebody where there's a difficulty between you and someone else, then, you know, when you sort it out, You do feel smooth inside, as the little boy said. But, you know, you win your sister. You win your... You can actually be closer, people, at the end of a tussle, like Jacob and having his hip put out of joint. You know, he tussled with God, didn't he? He was an overcomer with God. You remember the Genesis 32 story, probably, about Jacob and having that wrestling with God all night. Then you can become closer. Differences don't have to compete. Differences can complement. There is a difference between that and this. But it's not always possible. We have to judge with someone that we're going to, where there's a difficulty, and they might have a difficulty with us, of course, that we do work in tandem. Romans 12:18 does show that it's often, not always, not often, but it's sometimes not possible to make. Romans 12:18. You see, if it is possible, thank you, Phil. If it is possible, well, let's go back a bit. You know, let's see. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and don't curse. It's rather like the Beatitudes, isn't it, in that sense? If you're a peacemaker, by the way, you'll never be unemployed. I'll tell you that. Never be lacking in zeal, 11, but keep your spiritual fervour, serving the Lord, said Paul to Rome. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless, don't curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Come alongside people. Be there for them. Share their difficulties. Live in harmony with one another. Don't be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low esteem, of low position. Don't be conceited. Don't repay anyone evil. Why would he say this if it wasn't necessary? It was necessary. We would have said it otherwise. And these things are still around us today. I look for this, oh boy, I'm not there yet, am I? I've got this difficulty here. Don't repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone, if it is possible. It may not be. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Not pieces. Live at peace. So we have to assess whether there's mileage in this. Sometimes there isn't. You just got to agree to disagree. Still love the person. Christ died for them. If Christ died for Hitler, he died for your friend. I'm persuaded that Christ has died for everyone, except that most don't know it yet. But that goes back to before the creation of the universe, doesn't it? Another subject. So we get all the facts. We don't jump to conclusions. I have a couple that I was called in to help. You don't know where they are. They don't know who they are. In the past, you're aware that the ministry years ago was more of a hierarchical structure, wasn't it? You know, the elder, local church elder, pastor, preaching elder, pastor, evangelist, senior evangelist, apostle. There was a hierarchy. We faced that. In some ways, it served the church, but we've gone away from the hierarchical model. Ordained people are elders, pure and simple, servants of the church. A function, not a hierarchy, a function in the spiritual area. And so we have the responsibility then to use our ministry in a serving way. Not that it wasn't done in the past, but the structure is different, you understand that. And this couple, he was not an employed elder, but he's an elder. And although this elder would never say, you know, I'm in charge when he comes into a congregation, there was still that feeling. When I was pastoring in Southern Ireland, I was the pastor and things needed to be fed through me first before things happened. In the church years ago, the story went round that Raymond McNair had to vet the colour car a person was going to buy. That got out of hand because it was Stuart Powell going to go to Scandinavia, where you get a lot of snow, and probably a white-coloured car wouldn't be good in Scandinavia. And so very wise advice was given. But it didn't quite get to that. But normally, in the past, you know, you'd check a tape out with a minister before you took a book out of the library or a tape. That has all changed. This fellow elder, a dear friend of mine, still gives the impression when he comes into a church area, and you don't know where it is, might not even be in this country, that, you know, okay, I'm here, this is what we're going to do. It doesn't say that, but it's the aura. And that's been picked up by a person whose antennae are up as a deaconess, who's extremely efficient, and has misread. And I was with the couple, two or three nights ago in some part of Britain, big trouble, and saying, look, you've been misread, and you've misread the other person. And often when you get a triangulation, two can't make it, because it's gone long, many months now, it's got addled, sadly, and soured, then a third party can triangulate, you know what I mean, triangulation, you get a different view. If I start to speak over here, you'd have to kind of adjust the fact that you've got to look at a different background. So if a person comes in to be a umpire, referee, there's a special word, isn't there? Somebody who is into reconciliation to help two parties together. Then that can be helpful. But, you know, this is difficult. These things happen all the time. They have nothing against each other on the other side. They know that Christ died for them, that he loves them, but it's just misread and misinterpreted, as you know. Perception is reality. Do you get that phrase? Perception, as you see things, is reality. To you, to me, that's how you see it. It may not be reality, but perception, as you see something, well, until you get more facts, that's reality. That's the way it is. Oh, it doesn't have to be any more than the man who thought his wife was deaf in that story. So, you know, these are thoughts that come to my mind to help in the festival in Denmark. You know, knowing it may not always work, knowing to get as many facts as we can because we jump to conclusions, being sensitive, know when to go to someone and when not to do so. There's a time and a place, isn't there? You read Ecclesiastes for some of that. Sometimes the time not to go. To see the other person's point of view and to help, whether it's you and someone else or whether you're called in to a couple of parties who have a problem. Not to let things fester and drag, and certainly not to put a pillow over the head and hope it goes away, because it won't. But respect, humility, trust, openness, mercy, grace. These are kind of fruit of the Spirit, aren't they? This is God's grace. Yes, goodness and severity of God. Romans 12, whatever it was. Goodness and severity of God. But the goodness is there. But sometimes it's a hard route through. And you have to decide how that's going to work out between you and someone else. Difficult to know how to approach it very often. Asking the question, is it worth it? Is it going to really make a difference? So in conclusion, and we'll go to Isaiah for a few scriptures as we close. Shimon Peres made a pretty good fist of humanly attempting the peace process. And as he said in what I think was a very perceptive quote, he understood from hard-earned experience, I mean 70 years or more of it, of experience, that's a lot of experience, that true security comes through making peace with your neighbours. We won them all, he said, talking of Israel's battles, but we did not win the greatest victory that we aspired to. Which was release from the need to win victories. In other words, no more war. It eluded him, ultimately. And as a Jew, we know he knew the Old Testament, he'd know the scriptures we're going to go to. I want to go to Isaiah chapter 2, and just notice some of these things in closing. And as Philip gets us there, we know that we need to seek peace and pursue it. We know to follow after peace. You see, it's out there. It's not in here, except insofar as God is in us and gives us a peace of his mind, which passes all understanding. But we follow after, and we seek it and pursue it, and we're to live in peace, and the God of peace will be with you. Peace is right through the Bible, as you would well know. So here are some scriptures. It's Isaiah 2, we'll read it through, 2-4. And of course, for the Feast of Tabernacles, the festival coming up, wherever you're going, what was the theme? Peace, wasn't it? You know? Peace. Time of peace. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and all nations will stream to it. These are beautiful analogies here. Many peoples will come and say, go, come, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of the God of Jacob. He's going to teach us his ways, so that we may walk in his paths. You see, that's not the way the world wants it today. But then Satan will be dehorned. And our present problems of self, Satan, and society will be over. This world's problems with self, motivated by Satan, Satan himself, and society reflecting all of that, that will be gone. We've come through all of this by God's grace. The Lord will go out from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They are going to beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they learn, train here in this translation, nor will they learn war anymore. War is a learned behaviour, I would suggest. Is it really natural human behaviour? Let's walk in the light of the Lord. Phil, can we go to 9, verse 6 to 7? For unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Notice that. Your Saviour, the one you talk to every day in prayer, through Jesus Christ, your Father, is the Everlasting Father, you know, the one indivisible God. The Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace, of the greatness of his government and peace. It's not going to end. No more wars. Continual peace. How boring. Oh, really? Think what we can accomplish if we had world peace. Look at Aleppo, eastern Aleppo. You know, we're going to build it again. 250,000 people in the east part of Aleppo. That city's gone. Look at the damage. When people say hours and years building the thing up, blown up in a moment, barrel bombs, destruction of things. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. And I'll tell you, the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. And then 54.
And we'll go to verse 7,
please. There we go. This is the nature of God, the goodness and severity. This is Jesus Christ, is it not? It's not the harsh Father of the Old Testament that Jesus came to do away with those awful laws and bring love and peace. There's one God, Jesus Christ, the one they knew in the Old Testament, the one you know as Jesus Christ today. Comfort you, my people. And then in 54:7, here we are. This is the nature of God, the love of God. For a brief moment I abandoned you. How would it have felt in the brief moment? Oh, there isn't a God. Who's here? For a brief moment, God says, I abandoned you. But with deep compassion I'll bring you back. In a surge of anger I hid my face from you for a moment. You think God doesn't have anger? Where do we get our emotions from? Satan? Well, tuned by Satan, yes. But God is a God of creativity and activity and buoyancy. How bad those words are compared to what the reality is. But with everlasting kindness, verse 8, I will have compassion on you, said the Lord, your Redeemer. To me, this is like the days of Noah when I swore that the waters of Noah would never again cover the earth. So now I have sworn not to be angry with you, never to rebuke you again. Though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfailing love for you will not be shaken, nor my covenant of peace be removed, says the Lord, who has compassion on you. Afflicted city, lashed by storms and not comforted, I will rebuild you with stones of turquoise and your foundations with lapis lazuli. I'll make your battlements of rubies, your gates of sparkling jewels, and all your walls of precious stones. All your children will be taught by the Lord. And guess what? Great will be their peace. You're going to live to see that day, and you're going to remember in the next life the awful things that happened on this planet, and the tangles and twists and turns that we personally get ourselves into as we try our best to be peacemakers on this planet. So I hope that's helpful to some extent. Peace comes from God, and these verses I think are very comforting to know that God is very much for us. And if we do our part, you know very well, in God's good time, he will do his.